Back together again, you and I kicking off a brand new week, Monday style, December 8th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. We took a look at a DOT proposal to add possibly another lane in each direction, northbound and southbound to I-95 in Stamford, as a long-term way to ease constant traffic congestion in morning and afternoon drive times. Blogger Chris Powell returned to chat about several issues, including the upcoming 2026 Connecticut governor's race. We also featured an analysis of weekend comments from 4th District Democratic Congressman Jim Himes on CBS. This, of course, regarding a recent controversial U.S. military strike on an alleged drug smuggling boat.
So how many of us have been sitting in traffic and maybe on a daily basis? God bless you people that do this every day, yikes. But you sit in traffic on primarily, now the parkway isn't much better, but primarily the jackass factor is much higher on the turnpike on Interstate 95 in Lower Fairfield County. Now, you know the road I'm talking about. Lower Fairfield County, Interstate 95, running from the Greenwich, New York state line all the way up to and through north and southbound, up to maybe exit 18, right? Sherwood Island Connector up to and through 22, 23, 24, up to and through north and southbound in Fairfield there up to Bridgeport. Well, how many of you people, and I used to do this on a daily basis, believe it or not, in my dummy days when I had much more hair and a lot fewer pounds, and it wasn't as bad as when I was doing it 25, 30 years ago. It's ridiculous. Now, the amount of construction, the slowdown, there's just a lot of cars and trucks and 18-wheelers, and how many of us have been sitting in that traffic? Saying there's got to be a better way, like what's going to give here? Because despite what all the greenies are saying, people are not walking away from their cars. In fact, for a lot of people, for a lot of us, the reason people still like driving is they don't want to be around anybody else. They will sit in that traffic for an extra 45 minutes or an hour a day because it can be as cold as they want in there. It can be as hot as they want in there. It can be as quiet as they want in their car, or their SUV, or their minivan, or it can be rocking and rolling, whatever. Sometimes sitting in traffic is our only respite from having to deal with, yes, people. But having said that, the situation, and you hear it all during my show in the afternoon, during Melissa's show pretty much in the morning, the traffic north and southbound, depending upon what time of the day it is, what day of the week it is, it's gotten to the point, I would say it's unbearable, even though people bear it morning and afternoons if they can't work from home. But now there are ideas from the fine folks at the Connecticut Department of Transportation, the state DOT, not an easy job. They've got to maintain the roads, maintain all the other transit stuff here in the state. So while I was off over the weekend, I read this, spotted this. This was posted in the Connecticut Mirror on Friday. And let's talk about this, because this is something I know that you're going to have an opinion on. And you're going to hear some opinions and say, hey, that's right. What a great idea. Or you're going to hear other opinions in our discussion this afternoon. And you're going to say, did you hit your head on something? Seriously. Right? Are you okay? What's going on? I'll just give you this, and it's a good story. If you want to read it, it's in the Connecticut Mirror, CTMIRROR, theconnecticutmirror.org. I cite the Mirror a lot. They do some very good investigative work. Are you ready for this? Are you sitting down for this? Especially now if you're on the turnpike. If you're on Interstate 95, which I guess officially, is it still officially the Governor John Davis Lodge Expressway? You ready for this? How about this headline before we go to the break, and I'll let you start stewing this around in your fertile little minds. You ready for this? You ready? Will widening I-95 in Stamford help traffic? Huh? Will widening I-95 in Stamford help traffic? Now, I know what you're saying. Come on. Widen the highway. How much did that person have to drink? Well, apparently, says here, the Connecticut DOT is considering it. A proposal to widen the highway. Widen the highway. Now, I'll get to, you know, how I think this will work out. You can probably think what I'm going to say. But a proposal to widen the highway. Imagine what that would be like. What is it when they have to put in storm drains? A proposal to widen the highway is one of several concepts that the DOT has put forward to address congestion, primarily in Lower Fairfield County in the Stamford area. Now, we'll talk about that coming up. We'll get into specifics here. But initially, when you hear that idea, we're going to widen the highway. Can you imagine the construction delays? I'm just kind of throwing this out there. But you tell me. We'll get into it in detail here, or detail. Is it detail or detail? I'm not sure. Tomato, tomato, neither, neither. So what do you think? You people right now, either sitting in traffic in the turnpike, now in the afternoon, the heavier stuff is on the northbound side, obviously. Southbound ain't a picnic, but southbound's worse in the morning, generally. Northbound better in the afternoon. So how about this? Should we widen I-95 in Lower Fairfield County in Stamford? We'll talk about that coming up. How are you? It's a Monday. Same number, talk or text. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. All right, we've all driven. We've all driven through Lower Fairfield County, Interstate 95, northbound and southbound. Let's talk about the turnpike for now. We'll leave the parkway to later. Because this pertains to the turnpike, the Connecticut Turnpike. In particular, the section in Lower Fairfield County runs to and through the city of Stamford. And we all know how just infuriating it can be, right? We sit in back of the wheel and we look around and we just say, you know what? If everybody just, right, do you find yourself doing this when you're stuck in traffic, either in the afternoon, as we're hearing from, you know, Andrew right now in the afternoon, you heard that report there a couple of seconds ago. So, you know, the northbound run from Greenwich and Stamford up into Bridgeport. It's going to be like 45 minutes an hour, 90 minutes. Crazy. Nuts. In the afternoon. And then in the morning southbound with Norm, right? You hear the same thing. Slowing down through Stamford. 10 in Darien. 9, 8, 7, and 6 down through Stamford before you get into Greenwich. How many of us sit there and you say to yourself, there's got to be a better way to do this? Like, God, if there was only more road, right? But then again, you sit there and you think, well, wait a minute. Isn't traffic like water? You know how they say water finds its own level, which it does. You can get a bucket or a pipe system or whatever, and if you put water in there, it's like traffic. It's going to fill the gaps and the lanes and the turnoffs and the nooks and crannies. There's a Thomas's English muffin reference for you there. So what really can you do? So how many of us have always said to ourselves, geez, if there was only another lane, but if it was another lane, wouldn't it be just as bad? So the state DOT says here is weighing a fix that has roused local opposition. They want to add more highway. Yes, more lanes. Apparently, and the Connecticut Mirror is just writing about this now, but this past October, the DOT delivered a presentation to a committee made up of folks that live in Stamford. And business leaders and other local groups, they unveiled concepts to overhaul I-95 through the city's downtown. Oh, my God. If they do that, beg your boss to work from home. One option called for widening I-95 by a single lane in each direction. Now, to me, and I'm not a traffic engineer, I'm not a civil engineer, as neat as that sounds, wouldn't you just get another lane of stuffed up traffic? I mean, I don't know. Another suggests putting up a collector-distributor road running parallel to the highway. Kind of like a frontage road thing. They have that in East Haven and Brantford and New Haven. Now, can you imagine the construction delays? Seriously, you'd have to leave a day early to get through Stamford. Honey, aren't you off today? Yeah, sweet cakes, sweet cheeks, but I work the day after, so I'm leaving early. Seriously. Hey, is Mike in today? No, I guess he's okay. I just called him. He just got home from yesterday. Well, he's supposed to be in today. Well, it's that construction. Oh, yeah, they're adding a lane to I-95 in Stamford. Oh, yes, they're building that collector-distributor road. Is this serious? Seriously. I mean, look. Wouldn't we just love, wouldn't it be wonderful to add a lane, two lanes, three lanes? Hey, what the hell? Make I-95 in the positive commute northbound in the morning and southbound in the morning, rather, northbound in the afternoon. Make it five lanes. It's never going to work, though. Now, this is interesting. How about this? A third option, again, this is primarily from exits 9 to about 6, Stamford, you know, 8, 7, and 6, south of Darien there before you get to Greenwich. A third option from the DOT would be reconfiguring the exits and entrances and adding wider shoulders. Okay. Some local advocates who have been following the DOT's work said they were caught off guard by the proposal to widen the highway, which they said was outdated and thoroughly debunked. Angelo Bocanis, a resident of downtown Stamford who's a member of the local advisory, said he told the DOT that this was pretty bonkers to me. In a Friday interview, the DOT involved with the study, DOT people said, hey, wait a minute, the concepts presented in October were only preliminary and that the agency has yet to settle on a specific plan for the highway. Well, what are they going to do? It's not going to, and look, not that I don't want, not that none of us wouldn't like lesser traffic. Now, let's be honest here. I don't encounter that stretch of highway more than maybe 7 or 8 times a year. Going to and from New York, seeing my son and his girlfriend and everything, or maybe going to a game or going to the garden or whatever, something like that. But I could probably count the number of times on one hand I have to go through that heavy traffic, and I never have to do it southbound because I don't have to. I used to have to do that when I worked in Northern New Jersey every day and came down from Wallingford. Yes, I was that nuts to do that every day, hour and 35 each way, but I liked it. I like what I did. And I don't have to do it in the afternoon. You know why? Because I'm here doing this. So what about these DOT ideas? Reconfiguring the exits, now they're saying, or adding a lane or widening the shoulders. Or making like a frontage road deal. None of this is going to work. I don't think. Again, traffic is like water. You can make all the off ramps and on ramps. Is it really going to make a difference? I mean, honestly, if you're sitting in northbound traffic right now, from the state line through Greenwich up into Stamford, it starts to build in every day right around this time, 2:30, 3 o'clock. Yeah, it's great to say, hey, wouldn't that be great if we had one more lane? Is one more lane going to make a difference? Now, maybe if you play around with the exits, you tell me, especially you folks that drive this stretch all the time. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Add a lane to I-95 in both directions. What say you on that one, huh?
We love to talk to this gentleman at least once a month to get his pulse as to what's going on in the state. The best, I think, the best opinion person in the state, Chris Powell. Check out his columns, chrispowellcolumn.com. Mr. Powell, good afternoon, sir. How are you today?
Still dressing myself, usually by dinner.
So everything so far is flowing along today. Is that what you're telling me? Everything good?
Yeah. Well, I'm still waiting for the food.
But, you know, it's funny. I was talking with my producer, who you talk with here, Chris, and about the affinity of all media people, news or sports that we have toward, Chris, you and I know this, getting fed, and how that affects our editorial slant. A couple of your recent columns here, one that came out a few days ago, plenty of guilt by association to go around in Connecticut. And I don't know, Chris, I've been mentioning this on my show, like clockwork, hopefully, Chris, this upcoming governor's campaign, which should be interesting, I think, is not going to be diluted away from the substantive issues we have in the state by just pointing at the guy in the White House.
Yeah, I hope we get a better campaign than that. But, you know, the Democratic state chairman, Roberto Alves, who is also the mayor of Danbury, wrote an essay in newspapers a few days ago saying that the big issue in his opinion was whether the Republican nominee for governor, which likely will be State Senator Ryan Fazio or former New Britain Mayor Aaron Stewart, wants President Trump's endorsement. I hope the Democrats can come up with a more substantial campaign than that. I mean, for years now, I mean, they think they can just chant Trump, 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 and it just disperses all other issues. Look, the Republicans, you know, played the same game when, you know, Biden was going to be the candidate for the Democrats, and then Harris was. Everybody tried to link Harris to Biden, which was fair. But we got more issues in Connecticut than Trump. And you know, if the Republicans want to raise some issues, I think they've got some good issues. But if they just want to play Mayor Alvis's game, they could ask him. Does Governor Lamont want the endorsement of all the people in his administration that have gotten in trouble for corruption? I mean, you know, the former state representative from Bristol, Chris Zeogas, was convicted or pleaded guilty to corruption the other day involving Medicare and Medicaid fraud. The governor's former Deputy Budget Director Costa Diamantis was convicted for all sorts of bribery and extortion. You know, the governor lost his chairwoman of the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, Marissa Gillette, a few weeks ago, when she was exposed for having grossly lied to the legislature and the public about her power grab and the Utilities Commission. Does the governor want the endorsement of former Board of Regents Chancellor Terrence Chang, who got fired for exploiting his expense account, but you know, was still getting a severance a year at $500,000 a year? You know, there's lots of ways you can play this game, and I'd much prefer we talk about the issues we have in Connecticut. We got worsening poverty, we got corruption. There's terrible educational performance, the housing shortage. I mean, there's lots of things we could talk about besides Donald Trump.
Yeah, and Chris, you pointed out something in a piece a little while ago, and I'm glad you put the hyperlink there. Something I know that you are very passionate about is if possible, you know, having a custodial father along, a two-parent family. You put that link in. I guess it was a a rather in-depth study from the University of Virginia. And I mean, voila, Dick Tracy, to all those people out there. I mean, you know, there you go. And you mentioned it the other day. It was a fascinating fascinating survey I read that, as you always say, connected to poverty and connected to school performance are two-parent families. I found that link very interesting.
Yeah, the University of Virginia did this study during the summer, and they found that if you you adjust for a student's parenting, that is, if a student is being raised in an intact family with a mother and father, or if at least his father is heavily involved in his life, then the academic performance gap and the behavior gap between white and black students just evaporates. The study was, you know, it was just another finding that the big problem with education, not just in Virginia but throughout the country, it's not per pupil spending; it's per pupil parenting. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, 95% of a student's performance and indeed his success in life is just how much parenting he's going to get. But, you know, here in Connecticut, where the teacher unions run the school systems and they control the state education department, all we hear about is how we have to increase per pupil spending. And it doesn't make any difference at all. We've been raising per pupil spending since the Education Enhancement Act was, you know, passed in Connecticut, I guess, in 1986. And it hasn't made any difference at all. We still have the same racial performance gaps in the schools. The student performance in the cities is terrible and even declining. All we talk about is raising spending. When, you know, here's this study from the University of Virginia that says that academic performance and student behavior in school is almost entirely a matter of how much parenting the student gets.
Chris Powell, the guest. Check out his stuff, chrispowellcolumn.com. Chris, your latest piece, here we are discussing the public benefits charge again, and you say if the public benefits requires deception, get rid of them. And again, this, thankfully, I think, became a major talking point here. And now you've got some power company executives saying, hey, put this stuff in the budget, yet you've got some very powerful legislators saying, no, they won't allow that to happen.
Yeah, Democrats in Connecticut are very committed to hiding welfare costs and other subsidies in electrical bills so that the blame for our high electrical costs gets shifted to the electric utilities, even though the utilities, they have not generated and sold electricity in Connecticut for years. They will buy it for you if you don't want to get your own generator. But we are now responsible for our own electrical costs. We can buy it from any generator we want to. But the Democrats for years have put billions of dollars in state government costs and stick them in people's utility bills as these public benefits. Mm-hmm. I think that's why the Democrats are so attached to them, because it lets them tax about $1 billion a year in a secret way that is just extra costs on electricities that the public will blame on the electric companies instead of their elected officials.
And yet, Chris, finally, it just drives me nuts when we go back and forth with stuff like you just said and Pura and everybody screaming at each other. Yet, when is this state going to get together with the governor and legislators and power company and companies and other officials and say, listen, we need a cogent, well-thought-out, well-planned plan of action? What is the path here? What are the benchmarks we're all going to meet together? Chris, it is maddening to me that there doesn't seem...
I'm sorry, the governor knows what the solution here. The solution is to get more natural gas into our generation facilities in Connecticut. But, you know, then you have to, you know, confront the far left environmental loonies who think that natural gas is going to destroy the planet. That's a big reason why it's so expensive to buy electricity in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. The public benefits costs are another reason. But who can stand up, you know, to the leftists in the Democratic Party? Very few.
Yeah. The great Chris Powell joins us. Chris, thank you as always. We do appreciate the time. Take care. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye. I appreciate it. ChrisPowellColumn.com. I want to play a couple of segments here. In total, this will take about 5 minutes, but I think you'll find this entertaining and also necessary. There's controversy now as to whether or not the Pentagon, the White House, the Defense Secretary, Secretary of War, we should say now technically, Pete Hegseth, is going to release this video showing, apparently, a second hit on an all-but-destroyed drug trafficking boat. Now, we have finally established, we did this a couple of weeks ago, thanks to some journalistic outlets, the AP, the Wall Street Journal, saying, okay, these are not fishermen. We knew this from the beginning. Nobody fishes with high output outboards there and no fishing boats. We know what these boats are doing. They are transporting either a final mix of drugs or the ingredients you need in drugs, some of which, maybe not all of it, but some of which ending up in the U.S., that will alter people's minds, that will kill some people, and if they don't kill people, they will hook them. All right. And I don't think we need more than 2 or 3 degrees of separation to know someone that has either succumbed to drugs or has been affected by drugs, a family member, church member, synagogue, mosque, workplace, whatever. And there's a very interesting debate now. Basically, it's a two-pronged debate. Number one, should we be doing this to these drug boats? And number two, should we be overly concerned about this episode that apparently happened where there were two couple of survivors in the drug boat, they were struggling to get back into something, and we launched a second munition at them, killing them. So this is a segment. We'll start you off with about 2 and change minutes here, and I want to give both sides here because I do have a couple of thoughts on this. 4th District Democratic Congressman Jim Himes, with Margaret Brennan on CBS's Face the Nation yesterday on Sunday.
I think it's really important that this video be made public. It's not lost on anyone, of course, that the interpretation of the video, which, you know, 6 or 7 of us had an opportunity to see last week, broke down precisely on party lines. And so this is an instance in which I think the American public needs to judge for itself. I know how the public is going to react because I felt my own reaction. You know, I've spent years looking at videos of lethal action taken, often in the terrorism context. And this video was profoundly shaken. And I think it's important for Americans to see it because, look, there's a certain amount of sympathy out there for going after drug runners. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important that people see what it looks like when the full force of the United States military is turned on two guys who are clinging to a piece of wood and about to go under, just so that they have sort of a visceral feel for what it is that we're doing.
Why did it shake you so much? What specifically was bothering you?
Well, you know, and this is sort of the distinction, and there's a lot to unpack here about whether this is an authorized military action, which it is not, and right on down to whether these were legitimate targets, and they were not. But let me go back to some of the reviews I've done of other lethal action. Oftentimes when the Department of Defense takes a strike against a terrorist in Yemen or Pakistan or wherever, you watch a video of guys fully armed with AK-47s and sidearms and bombs and you name it, and they're on their way to do something terrible. And in this instance, you may have had bad guys. I have no doubt that these guys were involved in the running of drugs. Now, whether they were running it to the United States or Europe is yet another question. But in that instance, these guys were about to die. Had the United States just walked away, their little piece of wood would have gone under the waves. And as many times as Tom Cotton may say that it doesn't matter what they were doing, it matters essentially what they were doing, because under the law, and if you've spent 15 minutes in law school, you know this, under the law, if someone has been struck and is continues to engage in hostilities, points a gun at you, has a gun, they may be a legitimate target. But if they are outside of combat, they are not. And attacking them is a violation of the laws of war. And these guys, and this is why the American people need to see this video, these guys were barely alive, much less engaging in hostilities.
All right, that's about one third I gave you there. Jim Himes chat yesterday with Margaret Brennan from CBS's Face the Nation. Now, and I also saw this published over the weekend. We'll do this. We'll go to a break, and I'll have some thoughts before we wrap up. This is a guy named Michael Smirkanish, who is a longtime Philadelphia area political columnist, a talk show host, I think, on Philly, in Philly, or he was. He's a CNN contributor. I think he's on Sirius XM too. And he's a centrist guy. He's not, doesn't lean right or left. I've heard him defend and criticize both people. But this is interesting, and this was not in direct response to Jim Himes. I think Smirkanish may have done this on Saturday. But again, he does a good job here. And I kind of stitched together two pieces here because he went off in the woods about what the New York Times reported. So I will say there's an that segment from Jim Himes was a continuous segment. This is two pieces of Michael Smirkanish that I put together, editing out, I will say this up front, he says, as the New York Times reports and as this, I'm looking for his opinion on this. And he had a few thoughts as to why a lot of Americans are going to look at this and say, eh, you're running drugs? Maybe you shouldn't do that.
We live in a country where who dies from illegal drugs often determines whether justice is even pursued. Because when a celebrity dies, we prosecute the suppliers. Think Matthew Perry, his illegal ketamine suppliers, indicted, convicted. One doctor has received a sentence of 2.5 years in prison, while the others are still awaiting their sentencing. Or Michael K. Williams, the dealer who sold him fentanyl-laced heroin, sentenced to 10 years behind bars. Or Tyler Skaggs, the Angels pitcher whose supplier was convicted of distribution resulting in death, sentenced to 22 years. These are terrible tragedies, but they're also proof that when the victim is famous, the system, it snaps into action. But for the other 100,000 Americans who die each year, usually no headlines, no chain of custody trace, no high-profile prosecutions, and ultimately no justice in many instances. This is not to say that no supplier to average citizens is ever prosecuted, but even of those who are, how many customers do they get to before anything happens? Meanwhile, a celebrity dies and the authorities, they step up immediately. A system that delivers accountability for the famous while ignoring the non-famous is not a just system. It's a morally inverted one. And that disparity, that silent, corrosive inequality is why many Americans, myself included, have supported aggressive interdiction of drug-running vessels. Because for many families, it's the only point along the chain of death where anybody connected to their loved one's fatal dose ever faces any consequence. Now, I want to be clear. I'm not endorsing the second boat strike on September 2nd. Claims that the second strike were lawful, it seems dubious to me. Full transparency is essential whenever lethal force is used in our name. Still, the broader moral and legal debate cannot be separated from the sheer scale of the carnage that these traffickers are unleashing. CDC data shows that more than 105,000 Americans died of drug overdoses in 2023. That's the official number from the National Vital Statistics System. That's the highest ever recorded. The numbers seem to have dipped since then, but they're still sky high. Although the CDC tallies all overdoses together, nearly three-quarter involve illicitly manufactured synthetic opioids like fentanyl. So when I say about 100,000 Americans die each year from illegal drugs, that's not rhetorical flair. That's the CDC's reality. And where do those illegal drugs come from? The supply chain today is frighteningly efficient. Fentanyl precursor chemicals are overwhelmingly produced in China. Those chemicals are shipped to Mexico, where the cartels synthesize fentanyl at industrial scale. The finished product then smuggled across the U.S.-Mexico border in quantities small enough to fit in a backpack, but potent enough to kill millions. And the maritime routes, like the vessel involved in that September 2nd attack, they move cocaine, heroin, and synthetic precursors northward. through Central America and the Caribbean before entering the U.S. distribution pipelines. And that's the supply chain behind tens of thousands of American deaths every year.
All right, Michael Smirkanish, CNN. So listen, I understand Jim Himes is looking at this from a legal, legislative, military law idea here. Again, Mr. Himes is the ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee, but Michael Smirkanish there from CNN pretty much saying, hey, don't be surprised if a lot of people look at these boat strikes, even the second strike on this boat, and say, eh, big deal.